You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
We live?
Yeah, all right, Lombardi, I got a quarter.
All right.
Some people over the age of 40 will remember a quarter. Call it in the air.
Tails, never fails.
It is Tails. You get to start the show.
I get to start. Guy Haberman's here with me. This is fun. We've talked off air for years. We met first in Fresno. So shout out to those people watching back in the Valley. Biden Field. Bosques, right? Yeah.
That's right. You were calling
some Fresno State baseball. I called some Fresno State baseball after you. Shout out to Paul Leffler. Hopefully he's watching. I think he watches every once in a while. So Paul doing a great job still covering Fresno State. But we're here to talk 49ers. How you doing, man? You're on your way to Vegas, I think, today. So I was happy I was able to catch you right before you left. But let's talk 49ers before you have to go watch some basketball.
Last time I saw you was in Vegas.
Yes.
We had a great dinner.
We did. Where was that? That was somewhere at the Cosmo, right?
It was at the Cosmo. Yeah. And then the bar, the secret like bar situation afterwards.
The little speakeasy. And then the week got crazy and then it went downhill for the 49ers. And then the last month seems to have gone by in 2 days. It's crazy. There's been zero off season, in my opinion.
I mean, I was texting with a guy, Sully, who I met in Vegas. And he's like, things calm down for you. And I said, no, things have not calmed down.
They didn't ever slow down, never. Like maybe for 2 days, but we had the NFL Combine, and obviously now it's free agency. And for the 49ers, I mean, just yesterday, speaking of Fresno, Eric Kendricks was not technically part of the team, but for all intents and purposes, we thought that he was part of the team for, what, 12 hours?
Yeah.
From 3 a.m. to 3 p.m., and then he decided to go to the Cowboys, which is funny because, you know, 49ers fans are sitting there on Twitter most of the day laughing at the Cowboys for not having signed a outside free agent. And it so happens that the first free agent that they sign is the guy who had initially committed to the 49ers. It felt like college recruiting all over again. But anyway, Eric Kendricks from Fresno. Clovis, Hoover High School. We noted that was kind of a weird thing. You don't see Clovis to Hoover.
Uh-uh.
So anyway.
How big of a... All right. So let's start with that then. All right, we figured we would just kind of throw topics at each other.
Yeah.
So let's start with Eric Kendricks, because my take on it was I like the signing. It was an easy one. We never saw the money. I don't think it's been reported. But what I liked about it, David, was it just checked the box. Like they could move on from linebacker, move on to other needs. And now I think they still need a linebacker with a dwindling list of veteran linebackers available. So does that, where are you at with that? Do you turn your attention to one of their second year linebackers? Do you turn your attention to a guy that's been on the team before? Or do they kind of feel like they're behind the eight ball now at filling that Eric Kendricks spot to you?
I think the Super Bowl illustrated how important finding a dependable veteran linebacker is. That's not to say that D. Winters or Jalen Graham are incapable of making a jump. You just have to insulate yourself because it's hard to know if they're going to make that second year jump that's going to be enough for what the 49ers need. But after Dre Greenlaw went down, the 49ers defense went from playing probably its best football this season to getting torched, especially against that third linebacker spot, right? I mean, it was, third linebacker moved up to second linebacker spot in Oren Burks. He gave up something like 9 or 10 catches in that game. It wasn't pretty. So I think the 49ers, they already had seen a drop-off once Azeez Al-Shaair left at the third linebacker spot. But that position isn't on the field enough to really tangibly hurt your defense in a massive way. But once Greenlaw went down and everybody's having to shift up in the order, that became trouble, and the Chiefs picked on it in the Super Bowl. So with this Achilles, you can't expect that he's going to be back and 100% in week one. So Kendricks was a good pickup, or was he really a pickup? It was a good agreement for the 49ers.
It was a good idea.
Yeah, it was a good idea. The Eric Kendricks 49ers jersey is going to be a collectible that I'm sure the team hasn't produced yet, so it's good. But the 49ers do need to go back to the well. Linebacker play around the league has been bad, right? Kendricks is not in his prime anymore. He's an all-pro 5 years ago. But the 49ers have been blessed to have Warner and Greenlaw. They've been spoiled by that. Maybe Winters and Graham can develop into something, but I really do think they need to try to find a bridge here just in case Dre Greenlaw is not ready for a big chunk of the season.
Levante David off the board. Awesome. Jordan Brooks off the board. Bobby Wagner off the board. Josie Jewell off the board.
Isaiah Simmons, I think, is still out there.
Okay. Willie Gay and Blake Cashman off the board.
Even somebody like Bobby Wagner, who went to Washington, I just see that as Adam Peters doing what the 49ers did in 2017, bringing in a guy past his prime. It was Malcolm Smith the 49ers brought in 2017 just to teach guys the system. I don't think that Bobby Wagner has his best football in front of him. And he's going to be Hall of Famer. No disrespect to Bobby Wagner, but he's 33 now. Washington's trying to showcase a way of doing things for the new, you know, they're trying to imprint a new culture there with the new leadership. And I think that's why Bobby Wagner's in Washington. It just goes to show you, you know, it's there's not a lot of talent available. It's going to make a difference at linebacker, which is what puts the 49ers in a tough spot.
I don't think they can go into the season with it being, let's hope on Jalen Graham, though. Do you agree with that?
No, and I think to end last season, D. Winters was a little bit ahead of Jalen Graham. And D had to play in the Super Bowl. I do think you've got to insulate it somehow with at least one more veteran signing. And it's tough because they have a budget. Everybody was excited that Azeez Al-Shaair was going to be a free agent. And I think the 49ers were secretly hoping that maybe they could get him at some kind of discount. But $11 million a year, It wasn't going to work. Their budget, I think, is around $5 million. And Kendricks was playing for a salary about $6 million, I think, with the Chargers before they cut him. So I think it stands to the reason that they signed Kendricks, or they agreed with Kendricks to deal around $4 million to $5 million. And that obviously didn't come to fruition.
Okay. Your topic, what you got?
I want to talk about the defensive line. We've seen the biggest turnover in this Shanahan Lynch era, as far as D-line goes. I wrote this article today. It's up on The Athletic. Thanks for popping it up there. But the reason that we saw so much turnover is because the D-line didn't perform as well for the 49ers last season. Red is bad. Blue is good. Those are PFF grades. You got run defense grade and pass rush grade. And then you got the snap totals. And all the players shaded in gray are players who are not back. And a couple of those guys have already signed with other teams. Cleveland Farrell's in Washington. Chase Young is going around on free agent visits. And then if you go down to the tackle position, Javon Kinlaw's with the New York Jets. There's a whole lot of red there. You got good pass rushing performances from Javon Hargrave and Eric Armstead, but they weren't great against the run this year, as you can see on the chart. Armstead is obviously gone. The 49ers in total have to replace 50% of their snap load. They have to replace 2,600 snaps cumulatively. And they've already signed four guys. The only guys they've signed in free agency, actually, from the outside are defensive linemen, because they are restocking this cupboard. And they need to, not just because guys have left, but because I think that they're okay with guys leaving when the performance just wasn't as good as they had grown accustomed to up front.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I was looking, reading this article today, this is from this morning, right? It went up in The Athletic. I mean, there's two things you think. One of them is draft related, right? Like, is this an indication of where they are going to go in the draft? I think you said earlier this week, you know, they're where they spend their money tells you one thing, but I also think where they haven't spent their money may tell us something else. And that might be about what they think about, you know, who they could get at 31 or at 25, the depth of this tackle draft, right? Many people believe there's 7 offensive tackles alone going in the first round. That's not to mention guys who may be guards. You know, do you take this as any indication of where their head's at in terms of what they think their value at the end of the first round, the value proposition of offensive lineman versus defensive lineman at, say, 31?
Absolutely. I think it's simple for the 49ers. I think there's a simple delineation that comes from the way that the marketplace of players in football has evolved over the course of the past 2 decades. I think we saw this beginning around the year 2000, maybe a little bit later than that. I still remember I had a good friend in high school. His name was Kyle Bell, and he was an awesome athlete. He was 6'5", 200 something pounds, and he was initially a receiver, but our high school coach, his senior year, moved him to defensive end. And back then it was like, whoa. I mean, this is around 2000, I would say 2005 or so. Back then it was like, what are they doing moving this 6'5 guy who can just dominate people in the open field as a receiver? What are they doing moving him to the defensive line? And what they were doing is what's happened across the sport of football over the course of the past 2 decades. We've seen a proliferation of awesome athletes on the defensive line to the point where they have outpaced the development of offensive linemen. And it's no coincidence that every single team in the NFL now is talking about, we have a shortage of offensive linemen. We need more offensive linemen because the D line is in a spot that's ahead of the O line. So anyway, that has reflected itself in the free agent marketplace. You can get D-line mediocrity for an affordable price. You have to overpay for O-line mediocrity because there's a lower supply of good O-linemen relative to the D-linemen. So I think the way the 49ers are looking at this is, okay, free agency where you actually have to pay market rate for guys, let's get the D-linemen because you could get those players at a more reasonable rate just due to supply and demand. And then the draft, which is cost-controlled, that has the rookie wage scale, so you're not overpaying anybody. You're just paying based on the draft slot. That's where you can go for O-line. So I think it breaks down very simply into pay for D-line and free agency, draft O-line. And, of course, there's going to be exceptions to the rule because you might find a bargain in the other avenue for either of those two position groups. But I think it's so far we've seen it stick to that avenue for the 49ers.
Which I like because I think – the level of talent in the first round at offensive line this year is going to be good. And, you know, the beauty for them is there are some of these guys out there like who maybe were college tackles but project as guards, right? That's okay too. Like if the best offensive lineman available to them at 31 is a guard, I'm fine with that. You know, ideally you are drafting a tackle who then can slide over and replace Trent Williams in a year or two. But, you know, the need is so significant. When you go back, when you look at next year's schedule, the Niners play over half of this past season's top 10 interior pass rushers in this upcoming schedule, right? You play Seattle twice, you play the Rams, you play the Chiefs. Like there are significant pass rushers, interior pass rushers on the schedule this year, as there are every year. So I just can't do another year rotating guards. It's been 2 years of a guard rotation. I don't know how long a guard rotation should last, David, but I think 2 years is probably the max.
And, you know, that is an extension of what I was talking about. You've got these not only on the edge now, you've got these freakish guys playing defensive tackle. 49ers have one of them in Javon Hargrave, but obviously Aaron Donald is a great example. Just think about it. When we were watching football in the 90s, guy, it was Gilbert Brown was playing for the Packers. Let's put it that way. I mean, Reggie White was a Hall of Famer because Reggie White was ahead of his time. The guy was a specimen in every sense of the word. I mean, he was awesome at that defensive end position. But back in the day, it used to just be big guys on both sides of the line.
Tony Siragusa, rest in peace.
Siragusa, but if you had top level athleticism, if you could compete with the linebackers and other guys in terms of athleticism, you were an all-time great immediately. Now, every single one of these linemen is a upper tier athlete, and then you have your really special guys like Aaron Donald that you have to worry about blocking. And if that's the case, then your standard old run of the mill guard is not going to do the job. That's why I don't mind the tackle to guard transition, because you get more athleticism on the inside to be able to work with some of these guys who are just so quick in space. We've also seen a lot of the tight end.
You're saying you like projecting college tackles to guard?
Yes. I because I think that you could, there are better movement capabilities on the inside. I think you're just seeing a move from exterior to interior, right? Somebody like Joe Staley started as a tight end, moved into tackle, and obviously never moved into guard because tackle is where he found a great home, had a very good career. But I don't mind upping the athleticism everywhere. And I mean, when the 49ers, you see their prototype for center, for example, that's a position that they've taken very seriously in the past. The biggest money they've ever given to center, and unfortunately it didn't work out because of injuries, was to Weston Richburg in 2018. And Weston Richburg was a track star in high school. Weston Richburg, I mean, he was able to move, and then he suffered a gruesome knee injury against the Saints in that game that they won, the 48-46 game in 2019. And basically, I don't think he ever played after that. He retired in 2020 or 2021. But this gives you an idea of the way that things have needed to move in the NFL. You need to have athleticism to keep up with Aaron Donalds of the world.
Think about Alex Mack, right? Alex Mack was an elite high school wrestler in the state of California. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you remember he was a freakish, flexible athlete, right? I think Alex Mack could do the splits, couldn't he? He was a freak from a flexibility standpoint. Now he was a two-star recruit. He was not a blue chip football prospect, but he turned into one. I mean, he wasn't a blue chipper out of high school. He was a blue chipper coming out of college as a first rounder. So, yeah, that's another that's a good point. We have to talk about – is there something else you want to mention on this before I get to Joey Bosa?
Well, one more thing. Sometimes the emphasis on athleticism, which I think is what the 49ers have tried to do, sometimes you lose a little bit of the anchor strength. Yeah. And that – makes you vulnerable against bull rushes. And I think that's one of the problems with the 49ers offensive line. So you could just go get a complete freak like Trent Williams, somebody who arguably is the greatest offensive lineman of all time, somebody who is heavy enough to have a very good anchor, but also somehow athletic enough to just be able to do standing jumps over hurdles, which he can actually do. But the problem is that there's only one Trent Williams, right? So finding that combination between athleticism and enough size to be able to pass protect in just a straight drop situation is really tricky, which is why Kyle Shanahan has embraced the run first attack, because he feels that it's easier to find linemen who are more suited toward run blocking. And then he hopes that he can use that run game to stay ahead of schedule, so he's not in constant straight drop situations, which are obviously the 49ers weakness. But you know, I think the reality for the 49ers is, even if it's subtle, it's shifting, because they're about to put so much money in Brock Purdy if things continue going along this track. And we saw how good he was this past season. You do have to put some emphasis around what is going to be your biggest investment, right? So that the balancing act between run blocking and pass protection, I think we might see a subtle shift in that, and we'll probably see that shift for the first time in this upcoming draft.
You know, I think that's part of the reason why, one of the reasons why, and I know people who listen or watch me know I'm partial, but Kyle Juszczyk is so uniquely valuable to the 49ers and so hard to replace for them. The job he does in pass protection, not just the physical pass protection, but the understanding of what the right place to be is, not to mention how much he blocks as a lead blocker in the middle of the line, not to mention how much he's flying back against a counter current to block on the weak side, and then also be an option in the pass game, right? And we could have the same conversation about George Kittle. So they found ways to offset it. But I still think we've seen in the biggest moments, And the Super Bowl was a great example of this. Twice in the Super Bowl on two third downs. I spent 2 weeks talking about third downs, the one in the overtime and the one at the two-minute warning. You know, their interior line, whether it was for physical reasons or because the Niners got crossed up and outsmarted, they failed. They failed to block the quarterback well enough. And now maybe you would say, well, Brock should have got the ball to Brandon Ayuk quicker on third down, two-minute warning, whatever. That'll be part of his evolution, right? He needs to get better. But, you know, I the other thing with Brock as relates to this is his size is part of his story, and it's part of why he got drafted where he got drafted. It's probably part of why he developed some of the positive skills that he's developed. But a couple times a game, David, we do see him get hit as he's throwing. I don't think the ball gets deflected with him any more than any other quarterback normally. But he can get bounced off his spot. Interior pressure kills every quarterback from Tom Brady to Brock Purdy. But, you know, I think we just saw it too much in too many big spots.
Yeah. And I think the next step in Brock Purdy's evolution, we talked about the big step he had to take from 2022 to 2023 was the pocket presence and the ability to not bail as quickly as he did. It was all stuff that you could see, right? The stuff that he needed to improve from year one to year two was, okay, he needs to hang in the pocket. He needs to manipulate the pocket, step up better instead of bailing to his left because defenses were getting him to run to his left. And then he needs to do better when he actually does need to escape to his left. And he corrected all of those things resoundingly. It was awesome to watch Brock Purdy take what were his weaknesses in 2022 and fix them in 2023. I think that from 23 to 24, the progression for Brock Purdy is going to be much harder to see. It's going to be more cerebral, and it's going to start with him potentially even taking over protections at the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
That lies with the center in this scheme. And then there's, I think, a complex set of communication between the center, the quarterback, and the rest of the offensive linemen. But the Super Bowl was an issue communication-wise. There were 9 unblocked pressures on blitzes, and not every one of those had a hot read for the 49ers that was easily attainable for an escape route pass. And that's a problem. And, you know, I think there was also a blitz on the play that Spencer Burford messed up where Chris Jones hit Brock Purdy. It wasn't Chris Jones blitzing, obviously, but the blitz was coming from elsewhere. And I think that that might have contributed to the fact that Spencer Burford did not execute his assignment correctly. So something in terms of communication was exposed up front by what the Chiefs were doing. And Brock Purdy's next step as a quarterback might be taking the reins more firmly at the line of scrimmage to make sure that those kinds of miscommunications don't happen, regardless of whether or not they were his fault in the Super Bowl. And I think we agree they probably weren't, but you want to eliminate the variables that can trip you up because the 49ers definitely got tripped up there.
The way I look at it, David, is when the Niners lost to the Chiefs the first time in the Super Bowl, they went all in on drafting Trey Lance. And I think part of the reason they did that was, whether it was the reason or at minimum, it was an acknowledgement by the Niners and by Kyle that sometimes you need a player on the field that can make up for the things that you as a coach just can't do, right? Shanahan is known as a genius schemer, but the headset communication cuts off halfway through the play clock, and then the ball is snapped and things go wrong and things go right, and you just got to get out there and make plays, which Brock does, right? Brock does a good job of doing things off script. Well, I think what you're talking about is also the next evolution of that. The headset communication cuts off, and all of a sudden you're relying on Spencer Burford to make the right decision, which, you know, he's out there. He should make the right decision. But ideally, the quarterback, when you think about the best quarterbacks in the history of this league, for the most part, they are guys that they control the game once that play is in. It's up to them to say, you know what, we're not going to do this play. And think of all the famous stories of Favre changing plays in the dirt, right?
Manning,
Mark absolutely. Turner. Manning ran that whole thing.
Yeah.
A quarterback and a receiver recognizing something in the defense and simultaneously adjusting away from the play on the fly, right? It's time for Brock. You know, yes, should Burford have done something different? Sure. But if your quarterback is out there and he has the mental capacity to do it, then the best thing you could possibly do essentially is allow the pilot to land the plane, not air traffic control. right?
That's a great analogy. I'm going to steal that at some point. That's all.
and Kyle's great at air traffic control, but at the end of the day, his hands are not on that wheel, you know? Yes. And, if you know, Kyle would be like Sully Sullenberger landed that thing on the Hudson. You know,
East Bay, right? He's from Danville.
Is he?
Sully?
Yeah, that's good knowledge.
Captain Sully, either from Danville or Alamo, one of those two towns. But that plane was going from LaGuardia to, I'm guessing it wasn't going cross country since LaGuardia doesn't have a cross country flight, but the pilot was from the Bay Area. Well done. And then they investigated him after he, that was,
oh, the movie's
that
good.
Movie was good, but God, I felt terrible for the guy. He's a hero and he's being persecuted after. That was crazy.
Speaking of local claims to fame, do you remember the short period of time that I'm sure you do that the NFL had replacement refs and they had that debacle up in Seattle?
Yeah, with Golden Tate, right? Was that the...
Yeah, I think it was Golden Tate. One of the refs had touched down. One of them said incomplete. So people could go back and look up that controversy. This is like over a decade ago now. But the NFL briefly had replacement refs. They completely screwed up. It was like a Sunday night game or a Monday night game, right? It was a primetime game.
It was the Packers-Seahawks Monday night. It was early in the Seahawks build, right? It was in 2011 or 2012.
So I think that week they ended the replacement refs and brought the real refs back who had been like locked out or striking or whatever. And I just remember the guy who screwed it up like 3 days later was hosting a nightclub night in Fresno. They're like, oh, we've got, it was like the big attraction at Roe Nightclub. We got the ref who screwed it up. It's like, oh, he's there. Everybody go see him.
Oh, man. So to bring things full circle, Eric Kendricks was probably in high school back then.
I think he would have been. Yeah, we got to check the timeline. I think he might have been out of high school. Maybe it was
2011. Maybe college.
Is that what year it was? Yeah.
Yeah. He probably wasn't called. I think he was right on that border of Hoover High School and UCLA. But anyway, that's the most Fresno story that I've ever heard.
It is.
Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app because it's the easiest and most exciting way to get in on the action. While you watch your favorite players in sports, you just pick more or less on two or more player stats, and then the fun is on. Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball to hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. It's really simple to play. You make your picks, submit an entry in less than 60 seconds. I'll do it at halftime of a basketball game. And I also have some season-long more or less picks on MLB homers. You may remember, I've got less on Ohtani homers this year. We'll see. And at halftime of your next NBA blowout game, just jump on and go, Steph Curry more than 11 points in the second half. It'll change the game for you. Download the Prize Picks app and use the code HAM50 for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's HAM50 for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Oh, the places ground beef from Butcher Box can take you. Ground beef is absolutely the go-to item in my freezer. Why? Because at a moment's notice, you're making bolognese, you're making enchiladas, you're making chili, you're making meatloaf, you're making hamburger patties, and we are entering hamburger patty season. I've been telling you about ButcherBox for years. High quality cuts of meat, amazing value. Find high quality seafood as well that you can trust, delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping always. Today, ButcherBox is giving you, the listener, free ground beef for the life of your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order. Just use my link, butcherbox.com/ham, and use the code HAM to get free ground beef for life, plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/ham, code HAM. They say you're not supposed to give out multiple URLs in one ad, but for a great cause, you do it. Today's show is brought to you by Manscaped. Did you know? One man every hour, every day, is diagnosed with testicular cancer. In fact, testicular cancer is the most common form of cancer among men age 15 to 35. I did not know that. April is National Testicular Cancer Awareness Month, and Manscaped is donating $50,000 to the Testicular Cancer Society. You can visit manscaped.com/TCS to learn how to check yourself for early signs of cancer and Of course, use the code HAM for 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. With this in mind, you can perform simple routine self-checks at home while enjoying the Manscaped products like the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. If you don't like making a mess, it's great because this thing is waterproof. Shave in the shower, shave in the ocean, shave in the hotel. Code HAM at manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping.
Have I told you recently about our good friends at Game Time? Here's the deal. Go to your smartphone, go to your iPad, download a little app called Game Time, the fastest growing ticketing app in America. You can go to any event, sporting events, college or pro, concerts, comedy shows. Just download that Game Time app. You want to go to a Giants game? Bob Melvin back in the Bay Area. Matt Chapman, Blake Snell, they've loaded up the squad. If you want to go watch the Giants play, Steph Curry making a little playoff run. Concerts all summer long. Want to go watch something at Chase Center? Want to go watch something wherever you live? A concert, get outside, enjoy yourself. Use the promo code HAM for $20 off. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code HAM for your first purchase for $20 off your first pair of tickets.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, we got to talk about Joey Bosa.
Yeah, of course we do.
More I think about this, David, the more crazy it would be for him not to sign with the 49ers should he be released between now and Saturday, as you and I both expect him to be.
Well, like, listen, put the depth chart up there, can you? Yeah. We got this.
Hold on.
Got this ready. I think that it all sets up so perfectly. I'm going to zoom in on the defensive line. I shade the new additions in teal just so you could see where the 49ers have been doing all their work, and they've retooled this defensive line. Look at how well Joey Bosa would fit here just because of this guy right here, Leonard Floyd. Floyd is not an every down player anymore. He hadn't been since he was with the Rams. He's about a 600 snap a year guy. He can give you that floor opposite Nick Bosa, and I mean, he's had 10 sacks in each of the past four seasons, but adding a premier edge opposite Bosa, namely Bosa's brother, would allow Leonard Floyd to be in the same role that he saw with Buffalo. And that is the 600 snap a year guy that's rotating in waves. I mean, I think it's tailor made for the 49ers right now to have one more blue chip piece on this defensive line. And I think that Joey is somebody that you could theoretically get at a discount. As you said, We don't know if the Chargers are even going to release him at this point. Like, I think that there have been reports that they've been dangling him in trade offers and all this and all that. That's great. They don't necessarily have to release him. But if they do, to me, the fit is one made in heaven here, because you've signed durable guys. And I know that Joey Bosa's had trouble staying healthy over the past 2 years, but you've raised the floor sufficiently now to where you have insulated yourself against that risk. So you could just reap the upside if it's possible.
I think sometimes we project on people and definitely athletes, like what we think we would do, right? Like, oh, you want to go play with family. Sometimes people don't. I can think of two very specific high profile free agents who everybody thought they wanted to play one place. And I remember hearing privately, actually, they don't want to live by the in-laws twice. But in this case, we can assume to know what they think because they've said it. They'd love to play together sometime. Cheryl Bosa keeps posting on Instagram photoshops of Joey in a 49ers uniform. And the more I think about it, because what does this come down to? You said, I think the number one factor here, well, obviously number one is, do the Chargers release him? The number two factor here is, how much money is Joey Bosa willing to give up for this, right? If the Rams offer him $15 million and the Niners say, come play with Nick for $4 million, that may be too big of a gap,
yeah,
right? So the question is, what is the number that the Niners are willing to pay, and what is the number at a reduced rate he's willing to accept? If it's a reduced rate, it may be that the whole market for him is a reduced rate based on his injury history.
I think so. So let's just look at the math right now. He's due a $15 million base salary this next year, not guaranteed. So that's why the Chargers might release him, plus a $7 million roster bonus that gets paid out on Friday unless the contract is terminated. So that's tomorrow. So if the Chargers don't want Joey Bosa on their team next year, they need to get rid of him by tomorrow or before tomorrow. I don't know when exactly that would trigger, but they don't want to pay out $7 million just for a guy that won't be on their team, right? But any team that would potentially inherit the contract in a trade would be responsible for that $7 million plus the $15 million. So Joey Bosa is set to be paid on his current deal $22 million this year. There is skepticism that the league values Joey Bosa at $22 million for this season. But maybe somebody does, and maybe somebody will trade for that contract. But I would think that a team like the 49ers probably values Joey Bosa somewhere around the $15 million range, not at the $22 million range, because of the past two seasons of injuries, right? So in a realistic scenario, if Joey Bosa is released, I would see the 49ers able to go and willing to go somewhere in the $10 to $15 million range for him. There might be teams offering more. They probably would be teams offering more. That being said, part of your pitch and part of what Joey Bosa might think is, if I sign here for 1 year, I can rehabilitate some of my value if he stays healthy, and then he could sign a much bigger deal, one last bite of the apple a season after that, especially if everything goes right, right? If he stays generally healthy, 49ers win a Super Bowl, the entire, it would just be for the image of Joey Bosa winning a Super Bowl with Nick Bosa, that in itself would set the table for a contract, I think, above $100 million the next year for him. So it would be short-term sacrifice, potential long-term gain. That's, I think, how you would have to sell it if you're the 49ers. Now, that would be an if everything goes right scenario for Joey Bosa, right? You can't assume that he takes less money, plays for 1 year for the 49ers. That automatically turns into something lucrative over 5 years. You can't assume that, because stuff goes wrong all the time in the organized chaos that is the sport of football. But if you were to pitch it, if you were to pitch that family connection, that I think that's how you would structure it, right?
Yeah, and I think there's another value I think we should talk about, which is the value of what the Chargers would get in return in a potential trade, right? It's not just about somebody valuing Joey Bosa at $22 million and believing that somebody else values him at $22 million, right? Because if they cut him, you could sign him for $22 million if no one else wants to pay him $22 million and not give anything up. So you have to value him at $22 million as an acquiring team. You have to believe that somebody else is going to value him near that number as well. And then you have to trade something to get him. But you're not going to be able to trade a seventh round pick for Joey Bosa, because the Chargers, it's going to cost them $8 million against their cap to trade him as opposed to releasing him. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, you're going to have to give them something that's worth $8 million to them, which my guess, you tell me if my guess is like a fourth round pick is worth about $8 million. I don't know if it's worth $8 million to them, but my guess is a fourth round pick is probably more expensive than we think it would be worth. What would be your guess if I said you got to give the Chargers a pick that they would value at $8 million?
Something that justifies the dead money.
Yeah.
Maybe a five. Yeah.
A five. Okay.
Yeah. I could be. Yeah. Because, and also the Chargers are smart to hold their cards close right now, because I'm not 100% convinced that they will part ways with him. right? I think, and that's a huge.
You think Harbaugh just might want to keep him?
Yeah, yeah, because I think you saw how quickly Harbaugh turned the 49ers around, and he did that in 2011 because he inherited talent and they kept the talent, and that defense turned into a monstrous unit. They've already doubled down on Khalil Mack with the restructure. Now, I it's very possible they let go of Joey Bosa. I'm not ruling that out. I just think that it's really important for the Chargers' sake to, at this point, not broadcast that you want to get rid of him. You have to also give the impression, at least, that you might hold on to him, because otherwise teams are just going to wait you out and wait until you cut him, right? The teams wouldn't want to trade for him if they think you're just going to release him. It's going to lower your leverage significantly. So I think that right now we're kind of sitting here and we're waiting to see what's Jim Harbaugh going to do, because we know Jim is a bit of a wild card. He can be a bit of a loose cannon, and he's got the quarterback. He's got a star edge rusher on the other side in Khalil Mack, and you can have Joey Bosa. I mean, that to me, in this league where stuff moves so quickly, where you can get good quickly and you can get bad quickly, if you've got a QB and you've got two star edge rushers, you should be able to make some serious noise, right? Like, I mean, you should be able to fill the rest of that roster with enough supplementary pieces to be. I mean, there's so much parity in the league right now. They're already ahead in terms of blue chip talent of a lot of teams in the NFL. So I wouldn't be so sure that they get rid of him, but if they do, then, and it has to happen through a trade, I would say, to answer your question, a mid to lower round pick to make up for that dead money.
And that's, and it goes back to your original point, full circle. Someone has to be willing to take on $22 million. I also think if you're Jim and you sit down, and you go, okay, how do I win the Super Bowl? Well, I got to win my, let's start with the division, or who are the quarterbacks I have to beat just to get out of the AFC, right? You go, I got to play Mahomes twice. I got to get Josh Allen. I got to beat Joe Burrow. I got to beat Lamar Jackson. Like, two edge rushers is worth the money. So you've kind of made me think that the number one obstacle to Joey Bosa becoming a 49er is not other teams that would want to sign him, but just Jim Harbaugh deciding to keep him.
I just
think if he hits the market, how do those two, knowing what you said, they're not going to be offering $4 million. His base salary this year is 15. They might offer him 15.
Yeah.
How do you not take that contract if you're Joey Bosa at this point? He comes to more Niner games than some of the guys who were on the roster.
He surprised.
One year he came to more Niner games than Jimmy Garoppolo.
One of the coolest videos I ever got, I stand in the little hallway when the team comes out through the club before these games. It's a cool little vantage point to get. It's in, I think, one of the clubs. It's, forgot what the name of it is, but
the BNY Mellon, that one?
Yeah, it's the opposite side, though. It's the one that the team comes through. I was going to say BNY Mellon. It's something like Foxconn Industrial Internet Lounge, something very, very Santa Clara, Silicon Valley. But I'm there before they played the Cowboys in the postseason two years ago now. And Joey surprised Nick. Cheryl Bosa was there. Right. And then Joey was just sitting there. And I asked him, does Nick know that you're here? And he said, no. And then the team walked through, and Nick's usually just stone-faced, locked in, serious, because he's going out for warm-ups. The cool part about that is they're in full pads and helmets, and they're walking inside, which is always kind of like a cool juxtaposition. Normally, you see football players outside, but they seem even larger than life when they're inside. So Nick is just walking through, looks like a robot designed to rush the passer. And then all of a sudden he sees Joey, and his face just loosens up, and he breaks into this huge smile, and he walks over and he hugs him. It was just one of those moments, right? I was right there, and I'm like, okay, I got to film this. And so then I texted Nick the video, and he puts it up on his Instagram, and it's like, you saw the humanity there, and you saw the bond between these two guys. So I think that if this turns into Joey Bosa having a chance to decide where he wants to play, then something like that has a lot of pull.
Yeah. What should we hit next? Do you have something else you want to get to?
Yeah.
Things here.
First contract details are up. I have it queued up. It's Yotur Gross-Matos from Over the Cap. I haven't had a chance to study this yet, but the people were shocked by the initial contract value that was reported by the agent, right? It was $18 million over 2 years. Like, oh, this guy's not worth $9 million a year, but it always happens like that. The initial numbers are inflated. I'm going to study this. I'll have my breakdown of it. But as I could see here, his initial year cap hit is only $3.3 million. He only has $1.125 million guaranteed in that first year. So there's only $2.1 million guaranteed. No, $1.1 million. So his base salary is guaranteed in 2024, and they gave him a signing bonus of 8.6. So there's only 4.5 per year guaranteed. So immediately the contract size is cut in half in terms of guaranteed money. And Yetur Gross-Matos is going to earn that entire $18 million only if the 49ers are happy with his performance in 2024. Look at this. You see his base salary. It's the league minimum for veterans in 2024. It skyrockets to $7.39 million in 2025. $3 million of that doesn't become guaranteed until April 1st of 2025. So what this contract tells me is that they're going to see how this guy plays in 2024. And if he does play well enough, if he continues on the upward trajectory they saw with Carolina, they will gladly continue through with this deal through 2025. But they've backloaded the base salary into the second year. So it's not your standard two-year $18 million deal. It's a year plus one if he plays well in the first year. So that's my initial read on the contract.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know what it is? It's another guy in line that might get paid by Chris Kocurek, except in this case, if Chris Kocurek gets him paid, it'll just be for the second year of the contract he's already signed.
Yes. So if he plays extremely well this first year, you have him at a bargain for 2025 because you're totally fine with paying $7.4 million to a good rotational defensive lineman. I think Kinlaw just signed for $7 million guaranteed for a year with the Jets. And I think this is a different position, but they feel that Yetur Gross-Matos is extremely versatile. They think he could line up inside. They see some Armstead in him.
Yeah, I mean, it jumps off the screen.
Yeah, Arden Key, physically. All those guys. Chris Kocurek loves sliding guys inside to rush the passer. The guys with this kind of stature, right? So that's the upside. They feel that he's growing into it. They think that he's a good run stopper. If he does the things they think he can do in the 49er system, he'll be well worth this salary in 2025.
That's very interesting. Have you seen them structure a contract like this?
I've never seen the base salary jump like this in the original version of a contract.
Yeah.
You see it jump when they restructure a deal, because what they do is they take the base salary of any given season and they convert it to signing bonus. And that means the base salary will be the minimum 1 year and then it jumps the next year. That's only after a restructure. I've never actually seen it built like this from the get-go.
That's the Chris Kocurek, except, you know, Arden Key, in this case, he got paid somewhere else, but this guy could get paid by you. Maybe these are semi-follow-ups, a couple super chats from Dale. He says, what is the current cap and money needed for the draft? And what kind of money do the Niners have left to spend?
Well,
should I go back to your...
You can go to this one now. People are going to like this. There's two different salary caps. There's the off-season salary cap, which where the top 51 contracts count. But then it flips on roster cutdown day in late August or early September to the 53-man plus the practice squad counting. So I keep my own little cap sheet where... this is on the 53. So I'm projecting a 53-man roster and projecting how much it's going to cost. So I already have all of the Eric Armstead post-June 1st savings factored in. Those don't take shape until post-June 1st. But if I'm projecting a 53-man, I'm looking forward. So the team is looking at this because they need to have the big picture of how they're building things. And once you have the Armstead savings in there, right now I project 45 players on the 53-man. For the last 8 spots, the 49ers are going to have $37 million left to spend. That's quite a bit of money. Like they have maneuvered this through the post-June 1st cut of Armstead to push the dead money back. They've maneuvered this, I think, to be able to sign one more potentially big name, maybe a guy named Joey Bosa if he becomes available, and obviously pay the rest of their draft class, which is going to cost, or the entire draft class that will cost about $10 million. I think they're going to be set to carry a good $5 to $10 million over into 2025, which is going to be critical because of the looming Brock Purdy extension.
I also think that's part of why, I don't know if you've made a prediction here as we talk through it. As I've broken down the pie chart of what I think is going to happen with Brandon Ayuk, to me, the most likely thing is that he plays this year on his fifth-year option. What you just described is a team that does not need to extend Ayuk to lower his cap number this year. So I think it makes some sense to sign him next year if you're going to sign him and stagger even further back when his big money hits. But how do you think all this affects? Where do you stand on that?
Well, you also want to maintain peace in the building and in the workplace, right? you've rewarded your A-listers in the past.
Debo's like, oh, look, Brandon, just be patient, man. Yeah. It'll work out. Like, oh, easy for you to say.
Yeah, Debo got his money after year three. And that, you know, in a weird way, the 49ers were incentivized and everybody's incentivized to do that earlier because he wasn't a first round draft pick and there wasn't that extra year of team control with the fifth year option. To me, it seems kind of backwards that it worked that way, but whatever. With Ayuk, I mean, he's in the same boat as Nick Bosa, right? With entering the fifth year option season, but obviously not wanting to play on that fifth year option. He'd rather have the new deal before then. And everything about his play the past two seasons, especially last season, screams top of the line wide receiver. Maybe not the very best guy in the league, but gosh, there's data that suggests that he was. Let's put it that way. The volume wasn't as high for Brandon Ayuk. The target share was much lower because the 49ers had so many different weapons that they had to spread the wealth around. But the efficiency of his production with the volume that he got was off the chart. And I mean that literally. There's a chart. You probably see me tweet it where you see Brandon Ayuk's dot on the chart. And it's an outlier on the very upper right. And I mean, this guy has done everything that's been asked of him, right? Early in his career, he got some hard coaching. And now I don't know what else he can do to set the example that the 49ers want. I mean, I think back to the play against Pittsburgh, the McCaffrey 65-yard touchdown run in week one. Ayuk blocked two guys on that play. He blocked Alex Highsmith, who's a edge rusher, and then he blocked the defensive back, DeMonte Casey. On the same play, they were 15 yards apart. It took him about 4 seconds. First, he ran the chip on the left against Highsmith, and then he sprinted upfield. And 4 seconds later, he flattened Casey, the defensive back. So most receivers in the league don't block one guy on one play. This guy helped take out an edge rusher, and he completely took out a DB on one 65-yard touchdown run. The same guy who, by many metrics, was the most efficient receiver in the NFL.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the kind of guy that you got to pay. Like, you know, that's the way I look at it. If you wait a year, that's only going to cause issues, in my opinion.
Before the Packer game in the playoffs, I think it was before the Packer game, I went up into the locker room and I said, do you have a second? He said, what do you want to talk about? And I showed him the video of him pancaking Roquan Smith in the Ravens game. And he was like, okay, I'll talk. And one of the things he said was, you know, he just talked about his anger in how he plays. And I said, well, who are you getting angry at this week? And he said, I don't know yet. I got to watch the film and figure out who to be angry at. Now, plenty of guys play angry, but for receivers, they play angry like when the ball's in the air, they play angry. It's not about when the ball's on the ground, so to speak, being run by somebody else that they play as angry as him. Yeah, he's everything. You know, when you saw the money that Calvin Ridley got yesterday, and I saw people were reporting it as 50 million. I took that as total guarantee. Right. Not
well, somebody tweeted fully guaranteed.
I know.
And that's a big mistake if that's not the case.
Well, if it was the case, it'd be the highest fully guaranteed contract of any receiver.
Behind Tyreek, who was 53. But yes,
okay. I mean, 48 on over one of the.
Interesting. Anyway, it seems like there's a lot of conflicting information.
Fully guaranteed. My assumption is it's the total guarantee.
Yeah, I know. And that's often almost every time it's misrepresented because the agent puts the stuff out there first. He wants the guaranteed number to be higher. Then we get the actual contract, and the fully guaranteed means that you're going to make that no matter what. Right. Like, so versus total guarantees means it includes guarantees for injury, guarantee for skill versus guarantee for injury. And those two numbers are very different. And I agree with you. It's the fully guaranteed money that matters.
So when you see that contract and you know, they had like basically the same number of catches last year, Ayuk was almost double his yards per target of Calvin Ridley. Ayuk is 3 years younger. Now, Ridley's a free agent, which can inflate your price, but Ayuk is your own guy, which can inflate your value to your team. It just makes you that much harder to replace. What's the number you think flashed across Brandon Ayuk's head when he saw Calvin Ridley get that contract?
Well, there's two things, and this is important to players. They like the APY, average per year. It's more of a vanity number, but it was so important to Tyreek Hill that he got, like, I think, ridiculous, like $40 million base salaries, non-guaranteed, tacked onto the end of his deal just so he could hit $30 million average per year. So in effect, it's not going to be a $30 million per year deal because he's not going to play, I don't think, the last year or two on that salary. But anyway, that's important to players. So I think that Ayuk probably thought, I got to be a 20. Ridley was a $23 million a year guy. I got to be a $27 or $28 million a year guy. I'm just me speculating, yeah. But that's what I thought when I saw it.
Keep going.
Yeah. How much fully guaranteed money do you think Ridley had if it wasn't the $50 million mark?
If the 50 was the total, I would guess 30 something in the 30s. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm going to look at the structure of the deal so when it comes out so we know for sure, because 50 did surprise me, but it was one of the big names that actually wrote fully guaranteed. It was either Rappaport or Schefter, I believe. And so that's why I thought, it's actually fully guaranteed. But with Ayuk, I think that number is going to have to be 40 or maybe even a little bit above. If somebody like Ridley is going to be in the 30s when this is fully settled, it's got to be higher. And there's a drop off there. Tyreek Hill, you said it was 48. I think I saw 53. Say it's 48. Then there's Stephon Diggs, I believe, is at somewhere between 45 and 48. And there's a drop off to the low 40s in fully guaranteed money in the receiver market. I think Ayuk would fit really well in that little gap between 41 and whatever it is, like 46 or 47, where Diggs is at. I think somewhere in the mid 40s might make sense, because there is that gap that the market needs to fill.
I've got Tyreek at the total guarantee is 52, but that's not correct. See, these numbers are...
Are you using over the cap?
Yeah.
We'll do our research. We'll look at it, what I do at this point of the offseason, as soon as the big wave of free agency ends, is every single season I get to do this because the 49ers have so many star players. I get to write the contract prediction for, you know, last year I remember writing the Nick Bosa contract prediction and what that might look like. And the year before that, I did Deebo Samuel. The year before that, I did Fred Warner. And the year before that, I did George Kittle. So every single season, they've got one of these guys. And this year, I'm going to do Brandon Ayuk. So
two number updates. You're correct. Tyreek is $52 million guaranteed at signing. Next is Diggs at 47.9. And then there's a drop off to DJ Moore at 41.
Yes, that's the gap I'm talking about.
The practical guarantee, Tyreek 72, Diggs 70, Cooper Kupp was 75, Devontae 65, Amari 60, DK and Deebo 58, AJ Brown 57. So, like, to me, that number has to start at least with a six, I think, if you're Ayuk. It's got to be more than Deebo. Yeah.
So, Deebo
was at least a year or 2 years old by the time you sign your contract.
Yeah, so sure. It's harder to explain practical guarantee because it's not technically guaranteed at signing, but it's almost certainly going to be guaranteed. So I agree there. And as far as guaranteed at signing, that little gap in the 40s probably is where it's going to end up. So
yeah, it's a good sweet spot.
I do wonder, you know, certain players have put more importance on the APY than others. For Trent Williams, the APY was a huge deal. Right. He wanted to be the top paid left tackle ever because people use the APY to determine whether or not they say he's top paid. So do you remember that where he signed in the middle of the night and he made sure his deal was, I think, worth $1,000 more per year than David Bakhtiari's?
That's right.
And then Bakhtiari goes on Twitter and says, "You petty AF."
I don't remember that tweet, but I do remember the contract.
So for some guys, it's important, and all power to them. I don't know how important it's going to be to Brandon Ayuk. It was important to Tyreek Hill to hit 30.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Trent was in a power position too. He had the Niners negotiating against the Chiefs. That's about as good as it gets.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He was. That was cool.
Sorry, Dave. I was going to say I did think about Trent and Bosa. You know, Trent kind of Trent was not a free agent, but he basically fixed his trade to the Niners. And I do wonder if Bosa can, if somebody else wants to acquire Joey and they want to pay him 22, there's nothing he can do. But if they want him to take a little less, there's definitely something he can do, right? Which is say, I'm not going to do that and make sure that the only place he ends up is San Francisco.
Yeah. There could be a whole other thorn in all that, though. Again, Jim Harbaugh, loose cannon, wild card, history with the 49ers, some history with Jed York. I get that they've smoothed it over, but...
You never know. That's right. I forgot. Jim was like, it was like Jim and like eight other people that showed up to that 10-year reunion a couple of years ago. You remember that?
Yeah, that was cool. I remember that. And I still remember Jim and Patrick Willis walking down the hallway, and I was kind of just right by him as I was going up to the press box, and Jim asked Patrick, "You in the Hall of Fame yet?" And Willis said, "No, you know, Patrick's such a nice guy. It's so humble, right?" And he's like,
"Was Jim sincere?"
Oh yeah, no, yeah, he was sincere. Because Jim just gets sucked into whatever the current task at hand is.
Yeah.
And that was when he was Michigan's coach, and you could just tell in his eyes, he's like diabolically consumed with whatever's in front of him. And so he took a day off to rejoin the 49ers for the reunion, and then he you in the Hall of Fame yet? And you could tell it was very sincere. And Patrick Willis says, "I'm just waiting my time." And then Jim says, "It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when." And that ended the conversation, and he just walked off. I got chills. I'm like, I was sitting there. And then, of course, he was right. So that's good.
Yeah, he was. I interrupted you to make that point about Bosa. What were you about to say?
No,
do you remember?
Oh, yeah. What were we talking about?
We're talking about Ayuk.
Are we still talking about receivers? Yeah.
I think we'd moved on.
Some boring contract.
We can move on.
Yeah. Don't you have to get on a flight?
Yeah. I have Clear and TSA PreCheck. So,
ooh, look at you. I only have PreCheck. Is Clear worth it?
I got Clear one time because I was flying at SFO. They had not opened their PreCheck line yet at like 8 a.m. And the line was so long that I just bought Clear on the spot because that was the only way. Because I always get, you know, I usually get to security about 15 minutes before the flight boards.
Yeah.
And I mean, Clear is fine. Like, you know, I've used it once or twice. Generally speaking, the TSA line is more than quick enough, you know, and I always kind of feel like a kind of a tool when I use Clear and like to move ahead of five people in the line. So I almost never use it.
But you had to. I
had to buy it that one time because I was stuck.
I'm going to put my streak on the line here by saying this, but I fly a lot. I've never missed a flight in my life. I've missed like a connection where there's been a delay, that kind of stuff, but I never missed a flight where I've had to show up to the airport in my life. And anyway, that streak, I probably jinxed it at this point, but if I do find myself in that kind of bind where the security line is super long and one of those, you know, annoying people trying to sell me Clear is there, I'll probably have to take him up on it. So good advice in case
keep $80 on you just in case.
Yeah. They only take cash?
No, I don't hope. No, you can. No, 80 is to bribe your way to the front of the clear line.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yeah.
All right, David, this is fun, man.
Cash. Yeah.
I keep when we went to Vegas, I had a bunch of cash on me for tipping.
Yeah.
But you know, the people that you tip normally in normal life, not the, we'll have to cut this part of me talking about taking cash to tip people in Vegas out, but anyway.
We're live right now.
Oh, did you get to 70,000 subs yet? Did this get you there? I saw Mike said earlier, you're close to 70,000, which is
really
awesome.
I'm not aware of where I'm at right now. I don't know how to look at it. I think we're close. I think we're in the upper 69. So getting near 70,000, that would be nice. And how's everything going with you, by the way? You're obviously doing a lot more solo now, but I love watching your show. You have the best audio quality on YouTube.
You sound good too. Yeah, things are good. I'm getting ready to, did I tell you this before we started? I'm going to Vegas just to hang out. It's the last Pac-12 tournament. I've done a lot of Pac-12 stuff. Your Stanford Cardinal, I know you didn't pay attention, but they won a thriller over Cal last night in overtime too.
Really?
So
I like how you said, "I know you didn't."
I already knew that you weren't.
I had no idea. You were correct. I had no idea. You used to ask me every single time you saw
I've asked
me,
you a few times. I'm like,
"Hey, how about Stanford?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?"
Care.
49ers have taken every ounce of my sporting brain, like literally every single ounce. I'll watch like the Warriors play in the NBA finals. The Giants haven't given us anything worth diverting our attention to in a few years. So that's kind of where I stand.
I know. I'm waiting on them too. But yeah, I'm just going to hang out, see a bunch of people that I've known and worked with over the last several years. Well, I've got a few farewell to the Pac-12 parties that are planned. So I'm going to go enjoy this week. And yeah, the post-Middlecoff era on the channel, I think we're 2 weeks in or 1 week in, 2 weeks in maybe. And it's been good. People have kept subscribing and kept watching. So I'm happy about that. So it's all good.
Yeah. Well, keep up the good work. It's awesome.
Same to you.
Great hanging out with you at the Super Bowl. Say hi to all the Pac-12 slash. I started that conference when it was the Pac-10. That's when you? I was at Stanford. Yeah, it was the Pac-10. Didn't turn into the Pac-12.
You're doing like baseball on the radio?
I was doing the Stanford student radio station. Yeah. I got started doing KZSU, which is a Stanford student radio station, doing football mainly. And so Harbaugh came the year after I showed up at Stanford. I'm Richard Sherman's class, and Harbaugh came in 07. So I did that big upset over USC.
Sherman had a big catch in that game.
Yes.
On the game-winning drive.
Fourth and 20, and he picked up 20 yards in 1 inch. Like
Tavita.
Do you think
replay would have overturned it?
No, it was so I think they did look at it, right?
Oh, yeah, did they?
Yeah, they did. They looked at it, and it was just very inconclusive. The way that he fell, shielded where the ball was from the TV angle, and the game was on Versus. Remember that channel?
I do.
The announcers literally yelled "Touchdown USC" when Stanford scored the winning touchdown. They got the D team for that game. But anyway, the fact that it was on Versus meant they didn't have 85 camera angles to look at it. And I thought, like, in real life, I'm like, oh, he must be just short, but there was no way to tell. And it was cool that they gave it to him.
Real quick before we go, because we got a super chat here. Why would Kyle and John not want the center from Oregon, Jackson Powers? I think he would help the O-line the most, and Brock. Jackson Powers Johnson?
Yeah.
I think they would want him. JPJ. I mean, it's not their most pressing need on the line, right? But
no, but you know, Brendel, I think, what, is he under contract 2 more years? Yeah. And ultimately, center has been a premium position for Shanahan. You go back to having Alex Mack in both Cleveland and Atlanta, then re-signing Alex Mack to come to the 49ers before he retired, spending big money on Weston Richburg. The 49ers have never spent big money in this era on guards, but they have on tackles and on center. So you could also look at that center position as something that you develop. The reason I like Graham Barton out of Duke is because he's played every single position. They think he's cerebral enough that, you know, scouts do to play center, but he doesn't immediately have to be there. He can play right guard first, and then you could slide him into center. And maybe he can even, you know, in his first year, if he's not starting right away, he could also be an emergency tackle depth. I think versatility along the offensive line is something that's in vogue right now for a good reason, because you do have a lot of injuries and you do want we're talking about the top of the show. You want the athleticism on the inside to be able to compete with these versatile pass rushers. I mean, you're seeing, we talked about it, Yetur Gross-Matos lining up inside, taking on guards, edge rusher, kind of long frame, but if you want to block guys like that, you better have versatility on the opposite side, on the offensive line as well.
We should do this again.
We should. It'll be fun. Have fun out there.
Thanks. Uber 7 minutes away.
You already ordered your Uber. That's good.
I just did. Yeah.
Sweet. Cool.
All right, David, this was great. Go if you're watching on David's channel, get him to 70,000 subs and get me to 70,000 subs.
Yeah.
I might be a minute, but we're working.
Obviously go subscribe to Guy's channel as well. Have fun out there, and we'll talk to you at some point, probably next week.
Yeah. I'll be watching. When's Joey going to sign? Tick, 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 tick.
That'll keep me busy.
All right. Thanks, David. Good job, man.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.